Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 98-year-old Nate Murphy of Coronado, California, one of the last surviving pilots from the Cactus Air Force, the Navy and Marine Corps pilots who operated from Guadalcanal's Henderson Field in late 1942. Nate spent almost 2 months there after his carrier, the Wasp, was sunk. We heard that story. But Nate, maybe you can share a little now about Guadalcanal and that not-so-glamorous life in the Cactus Air Force.
You see the guys from the carriers once in a while come in, be in the nice press coveralls, you know, and they got the drink in the hand, and they turn us loose. When we come in, we had to land, and it would ping mud. I spent 7 weeks there. I had one bath in 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't shave, and everything was just yucky. It was terrible.
And I don't want you to sell this short, because, again, you lived it. The rest of us didn't. But you take off from Espirito Santo, 650 miles to Guadalcanal. There's no going back.
That's right.
It's a one-way deal. You only have enough fuel to get there. And as you're coming in, you hear the field that you're supposed to land on is under attack. So what are you supposed to do?
Circle, like they said.
Until when? You run out of gas?
You don't know. They're the boss now. So you just have to take your chances and hope. We did as we felt we should do or could do. That was our ball game. That's our field, the flying. The next morning, we were off early in the morning before it was almost daylight, 6 of us. We scouted out in the direction of which they had coming down from Rabaul, which was the big base.
For Japan, right.
Yeah, they came down on that run. So you'd run on down, do a little strafing, and if you got any bombs at all, drop your bombs and go on home. Most of the time, that was pretty quiet, but they could get a little sticky. I mean, we lost a couple there.
So most of these missions, you're flying off with bombs. Are you looking for ships to drop them on?
That's true.
Uh-huh.
That's true. We usually used to carry 500 with 125, I think, on the outside under the wings. You dropped what you thought you needed.
And this is basic stuff for you, but for the rest of us, maybe you can help us understand. When you make a dive bombing run on a Japanese ship, can you take us through that process, start to finish, what you're doing and how it works?
We had a pretty good idea of where it is because we knew we'd hurt them. We'd hurt them on that first strike. The next morning, we were hot to trot. We wanted out. We wanted to go get it. And, of course, when we got there, they found out that Eldridge's plane is already gone. They couldn't have gotten that far away that we wouldn't have found them. So then we looked around and we found the second flight of three. We figured we must have gotten 3 close hits to roll them over, or else they would be there waiting for us.
So these are groups of Japanese ships that were going to land troops on Guadalcanal? Is that what those were?
Yeah, troops and supplies.
So when you make that run, though, in an SBD, can you tell me what you have to do to dive down, how you release your bomb, what that feels like, what you're seeing through that process?
Oh, anything else now that you'd like?
I'm checking off the menu like yeah, you used
yeah,
to deliver.
Yeah.
Well, no, because most of us have never done that.
Well, that's true. And I had only done one or two myself. As a matter of fact, that was the first time I really dropped a good shot at something. Here's 2 Japanese destroyers. We're hot to trot. We want to get a shot at him. So we make a pass. The SPDs do not go at him. The SPDs come over here, and we follow. And we know we're looking. We got wind to worry about. We got sun to worry about. But anyway, we're coming up on him, and we're not going to let him shoot at us all the way in. I mean, why give him a free shot? So you come along here and you get ready, and then you start peeling it off.
You're now gradually peeling down toward the
that's
ship.
That's right. You started on down. Your main interest is dropping on him.
And how close to that ship do you get before you release your bomb?
We have the rear seat gunner every 500.
He calls it out.
Calls it out, yeah. Then you drop and come out. Then you have to be aware. The first one I ever went on was these two destroyers, and I pulled out. Nice, easy pull out. Nothing ahead of us. We're going great. And then some, hey, Mr. Murphy, what's trouble? Look behind you. And I look behind, and cripes, they must have thrown the whole damn ship at us. They were just, you know, going in like crazy. I forget that you're not out of it until you're well clear. Don't go horsing around.
So even though you've released your bomb and you're climbing back away from that, you've got anti-aircraft fire coming your way.
Yeah, that's right.
When you looked around, that's all you saw.
That's right.
And what about physically? What does that feel like when you dive in and then pull back out? What does that do to your body?
I think we're young enough, it didn't bother us at all.
Yeah, you don't gray out or anything?
Well, no, you're not supposed to gray out. You're supposed to, that's why they call off the time.
Uh-huh.
Maybe because we, once in a while, don't split the flaps. We might do a little bit, but really that was never. Oh, one time on a Rabaul, we had quite a strike. And anyway, as we pulled out, the cloud cover moved in. So as I came down, I had to go through a cloud, which was fine. And I continued the dive until when I pulled out. When I pulled out, and I, oh, my doggone, I almost went into the water. I almost went into the water, but I lucked out. So when I did, I kicked my right rudder and tried to throw the bomb into the destroyer.
You tried to basically throw it sideways because you're so low altitude.
Yeah.
Wow. And then if it detonates too soon, you're not far enough away yet. You could blow yourself up in a move like that.
Well, you know, I got to thinking about that afterwards. why did you do that? You don't know. Because the damn thing had things that fit in there like that.
Right.
And if you flew the normal, it would go this way, but if you didn't do that, it gets that way and it sticks.
Then so, it's hung on you and you got to shake it loose.
And so lucky.
Well, and I guess that's my question about this in general on these missions. How small is your margin for error?
Pretty small.
If you're a split second too late, you and your gunner are both dead.
Could be, yeah. It's stupid, actually, but you really want to get a hit. You just love to get a hit. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't.
And you flew 50 missions over there?
Just about 50, yeah.
How often did you get shot up by their guns?
Actually, in all the over there, I only got hit once, and it put a hole in my wing like that and caught on fire, and the gas came out and caught on fire, and I push over and a little more, until finally the flames separated from the gas, and as I went faster and faster, it went up my arm like so, and then it broke off, and I peeled away and got away with it. But to this day, I can't tell you what happened. Where did the rest of the buzz go? I look, and I'm all alone.
I've got to stop you here and ask you more about this because you realize you're talking about this like it's no big deal. But this is your life at stake. You just got a hole blown in your wing and your wing's on fire. How did you know to go into a dive and pick up speed to try to extinguish that? Had you practiced that? Had you been taught that?
I don't know. I had never been hit before. Didn't seem to bother me. I was lucky enough so that it caught on fire real early, so I had plenty of room, plenty of altitude. We were coming in at something like 25,000, I think.
And did you know there was ACAC incoming, or did it just... You just felt it.
At that time, we had pretty much put Rabaul out of the game. We ran a strike on Rabaul every single day. In our part, we'd do it every third day. But somebody made a strike every day, and they would shoot at us every single day.
But so on this occasion, you're kind of caught off guard when all of a sudden you get hit.
I was riding on the number two position. We were coming in, and I got interested in they were dropping bombs by coming down and going like that and throwing the bomb into our advanced planes. So while they were doing that, I was watching because I could see three fighters, the twin boom.
P-38,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I was watching that, and as I was watching, I saw a plane, and he was up in the air, 25,000. And he came, and I watched him come across. So I told Panos to keep an eye on that guy because he could give you trouble. And so he drifted back until he went out of sight. So then I didn't see anything. And so I just stayed where I was and kept on going, and then all of a sudden, boom, and here's that hole. Funniest thing in the world.
So it was from a Japanese plane above you,
mm-hmm.
that the hole came? So
yeah.
they snuck in behind you, put a hole in your wing, And you say, okay, I'll go into a dive and extinguish this flame.
I started off this way, and then I converted to this way as they found out that it wasn't doing the trick. I went a little faster until I got fast enough to blow it out. So,
were you scared?
No, I wasn't scared. That I can remember. I probably was.
It strikes me as a real high-speed aerial game of chicken. Yeah, you're going faster and faster towards the surface, which you can't go past that. So you're running out of time, and if this thing keeps burning, you don't have a plane to fly.
Well, that's true.
And you made it back all right.
Yeah, but as I was saying, I can't tell you one way how that plane got back. I thought I lost a lot of fuel, but evidently I didn't.
When you bring a plane like that in, do you go out and take a look at that wing after you're on the ground?
Oh, I suppose I did. Yeah, I suppose so. Man, I don't know if I had a picture of that. I don't think we did.
You think you could fit your head through that hole?
No, it wasn't that big.
Not quite. Put your arm through it.
Yeah.
And as far as life in the Cactus Air Force, you kind of made reference to this earlier. So you're flying these missions all the time, but your living conditions on Guadalcanal were probably pretty poor.
All I know, that like the first night that we landed there, I think there were four Marines. And they were going home the next day, and they were riding so-so, and their heads and shoulders were sticking out above the ground. The Japanese were shelling the field at the time. What happened was they got shrapnel, and it decapitated them. That's the first night. After that, we learned to keep your head down underneath and don't get in trouble.
Because they had ships that would pull up and shell Henderson Field, round after round after round.
They were big guns.
So you're there at Henderson Field. What are you going
to
do?
Well, what happened to me, I was in sick bay. I had 104 fever, yeah. So when I heard the first gun go off, I decided I could find better places. So I got into the foxhole. Now, I don't know who was in there with me. All I know is I got into the thing, and I just stayed there.
So you're sick as a dog. You're 104 fever, and you're hiding in a hole while shell after shell after shell comes in.
It was not the way to go, believe me.
How long does that last?
Well, I'd say it lasted at least 2 hours.
What goes through your mind?
Frankly, I don't know. I was sitting there. I was sitting like so.
You're shaking.
And I was shaking. And I really wasn't worried too much about what other people thought at that point. I just wanted out myself.
Yeah.
I got picked up one night to go with my buddy Pete Coit. We started on out, and we were going for the main runway. I ran into a shell hole. I just couldn't get it out. Every time I'd ease the throttle, the back end would come up. And if I got any more, it would have caught the propeller. So I was just stuck. At that time, the shells were landing on the main strip. So you taxi on down, and here's the shells shooting here. And here you, and come down, come down, come down. Okay, this is it. And you turn in here, and here the guy keeps shooting, and you're coming in, and then you take off. Once in a while, one of the guys would not go down far enough, and they'd hit the coconut trees at the end of the runway.
Well, yeah, and you've described a lot of the different hazards that you had to face, the different things that could have hurt you or killed you. So to be over there that long, to fly all those missions with shells from battleship and machine guns from ground forces and everything else that could get you, do you ever marvel at the fact that you survived it all?
No, I just remember on November the 3rd, there was a DC-2 or a 3 lighted aboard, and they took off, and our next stop was 602 miles.
That's how you left Guadalcanal?
Yeah.
And that felt good?
Yeah. I never apologized for it. There were things I could have done, probably should have done. I'm alive. I'm not dead. That was the name of the game.
No pressure. How do you feel about me reading your citations?
Oh, I don't care. I don't care if you read it.
The President of the United States takes pleasure in presenting the Distinguished Flying Cross to Lieutenant Harold N. Murphy, United States Naval Reserve, for heroism and extraordinary achievement as a dive bomber pilot attached to Scouting Squadron 71 in action against enemy Japanese forces in the Solomon Islands area from September 28th to November 5th, 1942. Participating in numerous vital bombing raids on enemy surface vessels, Lieutenant Junior Grade Murphy pressed home his attacks with fierce aggressiveness and expert airmanship, scoring 3 direct hits and probably 2 others on hostile destroyers. on October 15th when an enemy invasion fleet of 5 transports and 8 destroyers was sighted in the immediate vicinity of Guadalcanal. He assisted in sinking 4 and possibly 5 of the transports, despite severe fighter opposition and anti-aircraft fire. By his dauntless fighting spirit and unswerving devotion to duty throughout these engagements, Lieutenant Junior Grade Murphy contributed in large measure to the success of our forces in repulsing determined enemy attacks on Guadalcanal. Signed, for the President, Frank Knox, Secretary of the Navy. That sounds like pretty big stuff, Nate.
Do you believe that?
You tell me. You lived it. I didn't. It says, you guys sank 4 and possibly 5 of those transports despite severe fighter opposition and anti-aircraft fire. So they're shooting at you from the air and the ground, and you still got your job done and blew up those ships.
Do you believe it?
Yeah.
I cannot believe one person can do this and live to tell about it.
Well, let me throw some more at you then, because that was 1942. This is later on, because you weren't done after Guadalcanal. So they gave you a gold star in lieu of a second Distinguished Flying Cross.
Wait a minute. Now, where do we stand here?
You got the DFC for that, what I read you. So here's the second one. For heroism and extraordinary achievement in aerial flight as division leader and pilot of a bomber in Bombing Squadron 98 during operations against enemy Japanese forces in the Solomon Islands and the Bismarck Archipelago from October 29, 1943, to May 15, 1944, completing numerous bombing and strafing attacks on Japanese shipping, shore installations, airfields, and supply areas during this period, Lieutenant Commander, then Lieutenant Murphy, scored damaging hits on a gun position at an airfield in Bougainville, a large cargo vessel, and another gun position near Simpson Harbor at Rabaul, and destroyed 2 gun positions near the runway of the strongly defended bomber strip at Vunakanau, Rabaul. His skilled airmanship and courageous devotion to duty in the face of intense anti-aircraft fire and intercepting enemy fighter planes were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service.
Well, that's how the Navy documented Nate's heroism then. Coronado, California celebrates him as a hometown hero now. He'll turn 99 right before Memorial Day. Check out the photos and links at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And please join us again next time when we are reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.